Blog Talk Radio.
Morning, gentlemen. Want to hear our specials?
Sure.
First, we have the seafood special. It's been sitting around here for a week. We're known around these parts for our food poisoning.
Wouldn't it be great if you could be warned of life's risks? If you have diabetes, you can. It's called A1C, a simple blood test that can help measure your risk of complications from diabetes. To find out more, go to www.diabetesa1c.org. Brought to you by the American Diabetes Association, Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation International, and the Ad Council.
Good morning, and welcome to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes. I'm your host, Joy Keyes, and I want to thank you for joining me this morning. Today, we're going to be talking about the diabetes epidemic and how it affects the African-American community disproportionately. More than 14% of African-Americans have diabetes. That's 3.7 million people, according to the CDC. In 2006, diabetes was the seventh leading cause of death in America. Diabetes is more common in African-Americans, Latinos, Native Americans, and Asian-Americans, as well as the older population. Diabetes can affect your eyes, your feet, your high blood pressure, kidneys, your nervous system, and even to the point of amputation. This is a very serious disease, and that's why I wanted to talk about it this morning. Today we have a special guest with us, Neva White. She's representing the American Diabetes Association. She's a certified diabetes educator, and currently she's the regional director for community health at Thomas Jefferson Hospital. Good morning, Neva.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me. I'm very glad.
Go ahead.
I was just saying I'm glad to be here with you.
Thank you. And hopefully in a couple, shortly, Angie Stone, she will be calling in also. She's working with Eli Lilly on a diabetes campaign called the FACE campaign, Fearless African Americans Connected and Empowered. She started that in Chicago last fall in the Salem Baptist Church. Well, let's just start off with Neva. How can somebody tell whether or not they have diabetes?
Well, there are some signs that could indicate that you may have diabetes. I would say probably the first thing a person needs to do is to go see their healthcare provider and get something called a fasting glucose test. And this test means that you haven't eaten anything in about 8 hours, and we check your blood sugar at that time. And that is usually how we determine, you know, if you have risk. A one-time test, of course, does not say you have diabetes. If you do this test and it is high, your healthcare provider will probably ask you to come back and be retested. But some of the symptoms that a person might have as a result of having a high amount of glucose or a high amount of blood sugar in their body, one of the things they may experience is an extreme thirst. And it's a thirst where you just seem like you can't really quench your thirst. And as a result of drinking, you're also going to have frequent urination. You may find yourself also extremely hungry. And you also might find that you're losing weight and you're not really trying to lose weight. So there's this unexplained weight loss. You may also find that you're very tired, an unexplained tiredness. There may also be some irritability and some general discomfort, something that you can't really put your finger on. And then another thing that some people complain about is that their vision, because of the high amount of glucose that's circulating in their blood, your vision can become blurred.
Now, isn't there another test? I'm not sure if this is the same. It's called an oral glucose tolerance test. So I think you just spoke about the fasting plasma glucose test.
Right. Now, oral glucose tolerance test, that's one that's done where we challenge you. We give you an amount of glucose. We usually give you like a serum that you drink, and then we check your blood sugar 2 hours from the start of when you drank it. So that's to see, as a result of drinking this amount of glucose that we gave you, whether or not your blood would stabilize.
Now, what numbers should you be looking for? Like, what should you hear from your doctor? Should it say 100, 200? I mean, what number for the fasting glucose, what number do you want to hear from the doctor?
Okay, well, as with anything, when you talk about laboratory tests, it all depends on the instrumentation that you're using.
Mm-hmm. So I'm sorry. Okay. I think we have another caller. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hello, can you hear me?
Hello, yes, I can hear you.
Okay, great. I just joined the show, and I was just listening to see where you guys are.
Okay, well, we'll be getting a caller shortly, okay? Hold on.
Okay, all All right, thanks.
Okay, Neva, sorry about that. Go ahead.
Okay. As I was saying, whenever you talk about numbers, you always have to look at your instrumentation that you're using. And with any kind of instrumentation, there's usually some normal values that go along with it. But in terms of what the American Diabetes Association is saying, for a fasting blood glucose test, meaning you haven't eaten anything in 8 hours, the number is 126. Now,
okay,
if a person has a fasting blood glucose over 100, we are concerned. So from 100 to 126, we say that you possibly may be pre-diabetic.
Okay.
Okay, now for an oral glucose tolerance test, we're looking for a 200. So
a 200.
Right. That's when,
now,
go ahead.
No, go ahead.
A random glucose test. A random.
Now, if they go above that and someone is diagnosed with diabetes, there are several types of diabetes. There's type 1 diabetes, which was previously called, if I'm understanding, this is from the Department of Health and Human Services, it's called insulin-dependent diabetes or juvenile onset diabetes. The second one is type 2, which was previously called non-insulin-dependent diabetes or adult onset diabetes. And then lastly, there's also gestational diabetes, and is a form of glucose intolerance diagnosed during pregnancy. You want to elaborate on those three different types of diabetes?
Certainly. The first one that you spoke about, which is the type 1, that we used to call insulin-dependent diabetes, but that is a situation where a person cannot make insulin. And insulin is a hormone that we need in order for our body to be able to use glucose that comes from foods that we eat, primarily carbohydrates. And your carbohydrates are, you know, your fruits, your vegetables, your wheats, anything basically that's grown from the ground or comes from something grown from the ground. Those are the foods that we eat, a piece of bread, a piece of fruit, a glass of milk, that anywhere from 20 minutes to an hour and a half turn to glucose in our bodies. So we need insulin to couple with the glucose in order for it to be used in our cells. So
okay,
if you do not have the hormone insulin, then you must receive it. So you have to get insulin injections.
Mm.
Now, a person who has type 2 diabetes may also need insulin, but it's a different mechanism that's going on in the body. There's more of a resistance. They are able to make some insulin, but for some reason the body is resisting that insulin.
Now, I know some people think people with type 2, they have to be overweight or heavy, but there are thin people can have type 2 diabetes. As far as I know, Halle Berry, she's a superstar. I'm sure she has a personal trainer, probably tries to eat well, I would assume, you know, or people can cook for her, but she was diagnosed with diabetes.
Yes, it doesn't always have to do with your weight, your size, you know. Yes, it is a risk factor. Being overweight is a risk factor, but thin people can also get diabetes.
Now, what about the gestational diabetes? That's during pregnancy.
Right.
How does diabetes
what happens when a woman is pregnant? That's the diabetes that you get when you're pregnant. Now, the concern that we have with women, we're finding that women are getting diabetes. We find that they have diabetes when they're pregnant, and our issue is, did they have the diabetes before they were pregnant, or did
mm-hmm.
we find out as a result of the pregnancy? But usually with gestational diabetes, you have the diabetes during the time of the pregnancy. Once you deliver the child, the diabetes usually resolves itself. But later on, you may end up having type 2 diabetes. So it is a risk factor for later developing a more long-term diabetes.
Now, what are some of the, you said people are very thirsty, they're urinating frequently. I believe we have another caller. Hold on a second.
Okay.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Andy?
Yeah.
Hi, thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Good morning. How's everything?
Very good. We just started the show, and we're talking generally about the different types of diabetes, type 1, type 2, and gestational diabetes. And just want to tell the listeners, we are in the presence of greatness right now. Angie Stone, singer, songwriter, national, international star. Her last album hit number 11 on the Billboard charts. I want to thank you for coming on this morning. She's also a spokesperson currently for Eli Lilly for a space campaign, Fearless African Americans Connected and Empowered. Thank you very much for joining us this morning, Angie.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Neva White is here with the ADA, and she was just, again, talking about symptoms people need to look out for in terms of prediabetes. She mentioned about drinking lots of water, urinating, and also affecting eyes. What about high blood pressure, and what about the issue of stroke, Neva?
Yes, that's very important. People who have diabetes should make sure that they get their blood pressure checked. Having diabetes does put you at high risk for having heart problems because of what is happening with the diabetes in terms of how it is affecting your blood vessels. So it's very critical that we not only get our blood pressure checked, but also your cholesterol checked.
Very important. Angie, why don't you tell us how you got connected with the Eli Lilly campaign, and where did that start?
Well, I got connected with Eli Lilly and Company about 2 years ago now. I've been the face for the face campaign. This is my second year. And they approached me. I'm a diabetic. They approached me about coming on board being a spokesperson. And I thought it was absolutely a great idea because so many people follow my career, my music, and everything that, you know, entails entertainment. And I figured it would be a great platform for me to get out and help educate our people about diabetes and just how important it is to be tested. Frequent urination, like she said before, always being thirsty were definitely my symptoms. However, all symptoms vary. You know, everybody does not have the same symptoms. And as a result, a lot of people go undiagnosed. Some people have no symptoms at all, which is, you know, can be very alarming when you find out that you are a diabetic. But one of the things is hereditary. You know, family members that you know of have diabetes, then you're definitely in line to be a risk factor.
That's very important. And that brings up the issue of people just getting yearly checkups in general, whether you have diabetes or not, and checking in with your physician and asking, you know, thorough questions. Now, Neva, I know that if someone has diabetes, Neva is also a certified diabetes specialist. They need to take an A1C. Could you explain about what an A1C is?
A1C test, the hemoglobin, it looks at hemoglobin. It looks like how much glucose has accumulated on a red blood cell for the lifespan of the red blood cell. And a red blood cell has a lifespan of about 120 days, so 3 to 4 months. We can actually look at how much glucose has covered that red blood cell, and we can give you sort of a picture of how well your diabetes is being controlled.
What other tests in terms of, I know we talked about blindness, and also I know it affects your feet. And I remember hearing that you're not supposed to put lotion between your toes. Is that something that either of you have heard of, Angie? Have you heard of that?
Well, there are, you know, like I said, it affects everyone differently. However, they have a lot of different things that you can use on your feet. You know, there's diabetic creams. As is with cough medicine, everything is appropriated to, you know, the diabetic. So there's diabetic cough syrup. There's diabetic creams for your feet and different things that will help to accommodate your situation. So I don't think it's a thing that you can't put lotion. It's just using the right things for your diabetes.
What do you feel some of your changes you've had to make, Angie, in your lifestyle? You're very busy. You're traveling. You have children. You're talking to people about this issue, but you're also still doing your music. What changes did you have to make in your life in terms of maybe eating? What types of food did you have to watch out for?
Well, one of the things that I had to be aware of was just my sugar intake alone, a lot of the starches, just balancing your meals properly and eating smaller portions. A lot of people think that they can't eat good food, but there are substitutes and there are things that will allow you to have the same type of taste that you've become accustomed to over the years. If you log on to the website, www.face-diabetes.com, there is a whole list of information that you can gather to find out just exactly what it is you can and cannot do. But, you know, the changes are, you know, that not that difficult. You know, you just have to be prepared to deal with it.
Yes, and it's interesting you talk about people feel that they can't eat certain things. We have a large number of young people developing diabetes, and in the Washington Post there was an article about unhealthy foods in schools and the junk food and the soda. I guess my question to Neva this morning is, how can parents watch out for their children, symptoms in their children, or working with the school to provide healthier foods? Because I know when I was in school, I remember in the mornings going to the snack machine many years ago, I won't tell you how many, but getting a Snickers bar and a Lipton iced tea before one of my difficult classes so that I could be, you know, pumped up and stay awake, so to speak. Neva, so what can parents do to try to get kids to eat more healthier, and also working with the school systems and pushing? I know my daughter's school just recently added salads.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I'm sorry. You want to answer that?
Yeah, you want to say something? Go ahead. I'll wait for you.
Neva, go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I think the first thing that we have to begin to look at as a lifestyle, and I think that there's a lot of things that we need to do at home so that our youth can begin to develop these kinds of lifestyles. In terms of schools, I don't know if schools still have their, you know, the parent associations and things of that nature, where you're kind of creating this food, this healthy food lifestyle. There are programs also. For example, the WeCan program is one of the programs that is available, and you can find that on the WeCan website. You know, bringing different kind of health related programs back into schools. I mean, even physical activity. We know of some schools in the Philadelphia area where, you know, physical activity isn't necessarily required anymore.
Mm-hmm. This is true. Angie, when you're going out into the public, what are some of the things that you emphasize? You're going to different college campuses, is that correct?
Yes. Well, what has been happening, I think, overall is, like she said, the school systems have been changing. But as we go out and about, the one thing that we've implemented in my home is, you know, a lot of the juices and the fruit juices, reading the labels and finding out, you know, just how much sugar is in the liquids that we drink, and just trying to provide a substitute inside of the home first, implement how your children will react at school. I think Kool-Aid and fruit punches and all kinds of juices that carry a high volume of sugar need to be avoided. I implement drinking a lot of water in my home, you know, but I just think it's very important for the diabetic parent to be conscious of what they're doing to their children or what they're exposing their children to. It's very difficult, you know, for a lot of people to adjust to diabetes right off the bat. So it begins with the parents and how you implement change in your home.
Yes.
Another thought that I had is going back to brown bagging our lunch.
Mm.
And also one of the things that we teach in our classes is we tell people that be prepared for your snack attacks. We call them a snack attack. And make sure that you have something available to you, you know, your fruit or some kind of a healthy snack that you carry with you, and start to educate our children to take these snacks with them, have them available in the homes, you know, healthy things that they can grab and take. So I think
it's like carrots or crackers. Is that something good? Or what protein foods like? Now, what about juices? Now, juices, I mean, that's fruit, that's natural, but that's something you still have to watch if you have diabetes.
Yeah, you have to watch juices. You have to watch some fruits that carry a lot of sugar, like watermelon, for instance, carries a lot of sugar, something that's naturally sweet. You have to be very careful of, and, of course, you know, you can eat, you know, a diabetic quick fix is orange juice, and sometimes you can have an orange or tangerine or something, but you can't overindulge in those things because they are high in sugar.
I want to read something real quick. This is legislative testimony from Calvin Freeman. He's the vice president of board of directors of the California Black Health Network. And he states, I want to begin by recognizing the tragedy that diabetes represents in the African American and other communities of color. Disparities in the prevalence of diabetes across ethnic lines are well documented. I don't believe any African-American family is untouched by the consequences of this disease. I know that my family has been and continues to be impacted by diabetes. What can we do as African-Americans? We talked about food. Now, what about the issue of exercise? How much exercise is too much? I mean, 45 minutes, an hour a day? You know, what types of things are good if you do have diabetes? And in terms of watching, I guess maybe your blood pressure, Neva, I'll broach this to you. What types of exercises are good?
Well, the things that we try to teach people is just to increase physical activity. You know, take the steps. as often as possible. Try not to park, if you're going somewhere, try not to park right at the door. You know, park a little further away. So if you can't necessarily join a gym or do something more kind of regimented like that, just any way that you can increase your walking. We encourage people to get pedometers. And that's a good way, you know, just to increase your steps, sort of make it, you can make it a family thing, you can make it a work thing, you can make it a, you know, a contest thing. Anything that's going to get you moving is what we like to see.
Angie, what are some exercises you might have, do you do any yoga or weightlifting? What types of things have you implemented in your life now since you've been diagnosed with diabetes?
Well, I have not, I am a member of YMCA as well as a physical fitness gym, but my schedule sometimes does not allow me to take full advantage of it. So, you know, just like she says, I implement different things. I have stairs in my home, so I frequently walk the stairs. I'm always walking through the airport, which I, you know, now I'm more aware of. I'm instead of dragging through the airport, I kind of brisk walk through the airport so that I can get some form of exercise in throughout the day. We walk the neighborhood, you know, and instead of just, like she said, parking very close to the door, I would take the lower road out and go to the end of the parking lot to walk where I'm going. So, you know, walking is very therapeutic. It's good for the heart as well as burning calories. So a lot of people who are not able to go to a gym or can't afford to join a physical fitness team, then they can implement some of these things within the home.
That's great. We have a caller. I'm going to take a question now. Good morning, caller.
Hey, good morning. How you doing?
Hi, you have a question for our guest or a comment today?
Yes, yes. This is Carol Dunlop. I actually have a show on Block Talk Radio, and I wanted to say, number one, thank you for doing the show. This is awesome. A lot of great information. And I wanted to comment about the physical fitness because I'm a personal trainer, and I see a lot of clients who have type 2 diabetes, and all your comments are great. The main thing I wanted to say was to kind of say what you've already said, just get moving, just start doing something. The experts recommend that you're doing some type of activity at least 30 minutes, about between 3 and 5 days a week. Not everybody can afford to join a gym, like Angie said, and I'm sorry, I forgot your name.
Mava White, yes. Mm-hmm.
Yes, thank you. And so if you just start walking, just put one foot in front of the other. Walking is the best exercise you can get going because it gets your heart rate up. It gets you moving. So I just wanted to put that in. And also, I had been trying to get in touch with someone from the American Diabetes Association because I have a seminar that's coming up, 8-week teleseminar talking about diabetes and prevention, and I have doctors and therapists and things that are coming on. So,
well, why don't you email me? You can email me Saturdays with Joy Keys, and I can send you some information about NAVA and the American Diabetes Association and try to help you make a connection. So email me at SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@hotmail.com. Okay?
I will. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Joy, another thought that came to mind in terms of exercise.
Yeah.
A lot of people like line dancing too. That's another fun, exciting thing. We do that with churches and community groups, and that's something that all age groups that can participate in. And the young people are doing hip hop line dancing.
Okay.
That's
yes.
Another like really kind of community kind of get
right, because we you know, people don't have a lot of money. We're in the middle of a recession right now, so that's another issue. Now, Angie, you know, you have the financial resources to buy the certain types of food, but you know, in certain communities of color, there are not fresh fruits and vegetables, a lack of good supermarkets and things of that nature. I know they're getting better, but I know even in my community and Philadelphia, they just recently started in the last couple of years trying to put more groceries. So it's a very difficult issue. One of the people on the chat screen brought up the issue of wheat bread not necessarily being good. Nava, are you familiar with that? And they brought up the issue of different types of grains and flours that might be good.
Well, bread in and of itself is something that we want to watch out for because of the amount of carbohydrates that are in bread. We really advise people with diabetes to be very cautious in the amount of bread that they use. Wheat bread, whole wheat bread, is a better choice because you are provided with the whole nutrient of the grain. You're not getting, you know, part of the grain. You're not getting something that's been enriched with partial nutrients, but you're getting the full complement of the grain. However, we do caution bread, because when you have a lot of bread in your diet, it can cause your blood sugar to go up, and it can also, you know, add to your weight gain. So bread is something that we advise cautiously. A lot of places now are selling half sandwiches, where
yes.
you just take a slice of bread and make a sandwich out of it instead of a full sandwich.
I just want to mention
that a lot of people are also using the wraps as well.
The sandwich wraps.
Yes,
those are good. They're very convenient. And like Neva was mentioning, brown bagging it. That way you know what you're eating. You know the portion size. I want to mention the website again that Angie is working with Eli Lilly. That's www.face-diabetes.com. Also, for the American Diabetes Association, you want to check out www.diabetes.org. Again, www.diabetes.org. Both of those websites have a lot of useful information. I want to, I guess, talk about, we talked about food, we talked about exercise. What about the medicines? I know, Neva, you mentioned that everybody may not need insulin. What are some other things or types of medicines people take? I know I heard of Januvia, Starlix.
Mm-hmm. So there are oral medications, pills, that people take for their diabetes, and there's injections. And the pills are not, you know, they're not a pill form of insulin. They are pills that help the body to work to either kind of jumpstart your insulin, kind of boost your insulin, or work on other organs in your body, for example, your liver, to kind of tell your liver not to make so much glucose, or to tell your muscles to kind of pull in more glucose. So there are medications available. There's a whole host of medications. There are some combination medications also available. But at some point, individuals may have to consider insulin. We do have a lot of different kinds of insulins that are available now that mimic more so how the body supplies your natural way of supplying insulin. I know a lot of people are afraid of insulin. You know, that's a big fear. But insulin is not something to be feared. It's actually something that has helped a lot of people and prevented a lot of complications when we talk about diabetes.
Right.
Absolutely. Because, I mean, everybody's case, this goes back to everybody's case being different. You know, for instance, my diabetes, after getting checked, my body is making a sufficient amount of insulin on its own. So my medication was switched to accommodate just that, keeping that level of insulin present in my body. Mine might not be as strong as the next person. Some people's body make no insulin at all.
Right.
So, you know,
so that goes to
this is why they need to be checked, because
right.
based on those tests, if your body is making sufficient amount of insulin, then it's basically discipline. It's, you know, your discipline.
Now, how often should you see your primary care physician? How often should someone see? Is it 3 times a year, twice a year, more than the regular individual who doesn't have diabetes?
Well, once you do get diagnosed with diabetes, your care physician will give you a schedule of when you should come back in. Some people have to come in every 3 months. Some people have to come in, like you say, twice a year, depending on just how bad or how regulated their sugar is. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, for me, my, like I said, I produce sufficient amount of insulin, so I don't have to visit the doctor as much. Now, of course, there are times when, as a diabetic, we can get carried away, like holidays, Christmas, Thanksgiving, all these things. These are the areas where diabetes or diabetics have to be extra careful to not overindulge, because there's a lot of cooking going on, a lot of family, so you can't kind of itemize cooking. But
mm-hmm.
the diabetic has to discipline their mind and their thought process into what to take in and what not to take in. So, you know, you have to be real careful there.
Now, do you have? Do you mind me asking, Angie, if there are other people? We mentioned the issue of genetics playing a factor. Were there other people in your family that had diabetes, and you were aware?
My mom was diagnosed shortly before I was diagnosed and her sister was diagnosed. She actually succumbed to diabetes and passed away long before I got involved with the Eli Lilly campaign. And one of the reasons I did get involved was because I think had she been more aware of the effects of, you know, diabetes and just how to deal with it, she probably would have lived longer.
What's your next steps with the campaign? Are you going to a certain city or a certain college with the campaign?
Well, actually, our next big event is in Atlanta. We've been to Atlanta before, but we're going back to Atlanta, which is actually coming up very soon. So in order to find out the specials, they can log on to the website, state-diabetes.com, and get a full schedule to see if we're going to be in your area and when.
Again, that's www.face-diabetes.com, and you can check out Angie's upcoming schedule with the Face Diabetes campaign. And again, FACE stands for Fearless African Americans Connected and Empowered. I just love that name, Fearless. I mean, you really do have to be fearless when you're dealing with a chronic medical condition. And like you said, being disciplined. Also, I want to mention that, again, people think, again, about the issue of being overweight or obese or anything. You can be thin and still have diabetes. And as African Americans, you know, food is a part of our culture. Somebody comes into your house, you offer them something to eat. I mean, if you don't, it's kind of rude. When you're going out with your friends, you talk to your girlfriend, hey, let's go get something to eat. So food is such a big part of our lives. So it's really important that if you have diabetes, and even if you don't, just to start being more conscious of what you're eating. Now, is there an issue of when you eat? Should you eat every couple hours as a diabetic, or does it matter?
Once you start to learn a little bit more about what diabetes is and how to control your diabetes, it gives you a great outline, which is why I'm encouraging people to get on the website, because you do eat more frequent but smaller meals, and it's based on the individual and their condition. This is why it's very important to be monitored so that you know the status of where you stand.
Neva, what are some initiatives that you're working on with the Diabetes Association here in the Pennsylvania area?
Well, one of our big programs is Project Power, and that's our faith-based program. We work with churches in the community, and we have several components that go with Project Power. We look at your heart. We look at moving. We look at nutrition. So it's a comprehensive program that any faith community can get involved in. There are representatives from the ADA that actually go out to the congregations. We work with congregations to do education. So it's an excellent program that's provided by the ADA.
Is there a phone number, do you know, that someone can call to reach out to you or to the diabetes in the local area?
In the Philadelphia area, our director is Michelle Foster. And her telephone number is 610-828-5003.
Okay, someone in the chat room just mentioned the issue of fasting. Are either of you aware of that being helpful for someone who's diabetic? I mean, would that not be dangerous? They need to eat every couple hours? Angie, have you heard of that?
Yeah, I can't really say for the individual, but fasting is not something that I would suggest because you have to supply the body in order for the insulin to be produced. So it's not anything that I can honestly answer and say yes or no. I would be concerned, being a diabetic, since you're on a regimen and a particular diet, that you would have to keep up with that.
Neva, have you heard of that?
I've not heard of fasting as a way of remedying or helping diabetes. I would not suggest fasting. I mean, if a person wanted to do some type of a fast of some sort, they would have to consult their healthcare provider to make sure that, you know, that they were under medical care to do something like that. I would agree with Angie on that one.
Now, also, diabetes affects your cholesterol and getting tested for HDL and LDL. Neva, you want to explain what numbers they should be looking for in terms of their cholesterol?
Well, at this point, we're really recommending people to get a full, what we call a full lipid profile, where we can not only look at your total cholesterol, which we were saying should be under 200, your good cholesterol, which is the HDL, we were saying, you know, we wanted that to be maybe around 50 for women, maybe about 55 for women, maybe about 50 for men. The higher, the better for the good cholesterol. And then your LDL, which is the bad cholesterol, we were saying 100 or lower. We're actually trying to get it that even lower for people who have diabetes. But one of the most important things is you really need to get your full complement of your lipid profile, because we want to also look at the size of the molecules. Because the smaller, you know, that bad cholesterol is, the more it has the ability to get into your blood vessels and cause problems. So it's not only just looking at the numbers, but also looking at the size. And another thing that we don't really think about that much is your triglycerides. I mean, if we were to do your cholesterol, we would look at your triglycerides were high, your good cholesterol was low, and you didn't have diabetes, that would tell us that that was a risk factor right then and there for diabetes, having a low good cholesterol and a high triglyceride. So your cholesterol tells us a lot about your risk for diabetes. And then it also tells us a lot about potential complications that could come from diabetes.
Yeah. Now, we also mentioned the issue of blindness and also your feet and how it affects your feet and checking your feet. But as Angie said, it affects people in different ways. I mean, it can affect people's nervous system also. Angie, are you familiar with that, anybody in your family or people that you know, it affecting their nervous system?
Absolutely. I mean, you can, your feet, your circulation is affected immensely by diabetes, which means you have to watch your feet all the time because, of course, you're either standing or sitting. If you bend your knees too long, some people can feel a tingling or a numbing in their fingers or their feet, and that is a sign that, you know, you're having circulatory problems. But you should definitely get your feet checked, and that's why exercise is so important.
Now, also, in terms of people's eyes, I mean, people are getting older. Maybe they're thinking, well, I'm just getting older and, you know, I'm getting up in age and I need to get some bifocals or something. Now, I mean, are there specific eye symptoms, Neva, that they should look out for? Is it fogginess or spots, that you see spots? What is it in terms of your eyes that you need to look out for?
Well, it's primarily a blurred vision, but sometimes you can't always put your finger on it. When a person does get an eye exam, if they get a dilated eye exam, that way the doctor's able to look and see the condition of their blood vessels. And a lot of times, you would be surprised. People go in to get their eyes checked, and then, you know, the optometrist, the ophthalmologist will say, have you had your blood sugar checked, just by looking at the condition of their eyes. The thing about diabetes is you could have diabetes for years before you're actually diagnosed with it. So by the time you find out you actually have it, some of the complications of having it for 5 or maybe even 10 years without knowing it.
Well, that's the pre-diabetes we were talking about. Pre-diabetes, people are walking around with this pre-diabetes. Now, what does that mean specifically?
Well, they could have pre-diabetes, or they could actually be walking around with diabetes and not know it. Because, as Angie was saying, you know, we talked about the symptoms, but, you know, thirst and having to go to the bathroom, those are things that we can maybe even get used to. You know, you can get used to being thirsty, and it may not always be the same amount of thirst. So with diabetes, it isn't like something that, well, you know, you go to hospital and say, oh, I think I have diabetes, because most of the time people find out kind of by accident. That's not
that
really
they have that.
Now,
Angie, you travel a lot all over the country, outside the country. Some people might be feeling, well, I got diagnosed with diabetes, I still want to travel. What about carrying my needles through check-in, and do I need a letter from a doctor? I mean, how do you handle, you know, having all the supplies that you need while you're traveling on such a busy schedule?
Well, normally you don't get any problems when it's something medical. A lot of people take breathing machines through security. If you're insulin dependent, obviously you will have a medical bag. If security stops you and, you know, you have to have orange juice because you're diabetic, normally they'll let those things go through.
Now, somebody asked me in the chat screen about pancreas. Now, Neva, maybe you're familiar with this. How does diabetes affect your pancreas?
Well, the pancreas is the organ where insulin is produced. So that is our main producing organ, you know, our organ that produces the insulin.
And so in people with diabetes, it's slowing down, it's breaking down, and it's not working properly.
Right, depending upon what kind of diabetes you have. Some people are, as we said, are able to produce insulin. It could just be that your body is insulin resistant. But the actual cells in the pancreas, which are the beta cells, over time, they can become destroyed. And a person that may not start out having to use insulin at some point in their diabetes through no fault of their own, just through the disease process, may have to be put on insulin. So insulin isn't an indication necessarily of how good or bad your disease is. It's an indication of the disease process and what's going on in your body. A lot of people think, my diabetes is worse than yours because I'm on insulin and you're not, but that's not a direct correlation.
Now, Angie, how are you talking to your kids? Were your kids nervous when they found out that mommy was dealing with this? How did you speak to them? If someone's a parent and they find out they have diabetes, what are some things you might suggest to them to talk to their children about?
Well, I definitely have to talk to my kids because they are in school. I have a son that's going to the seventh grade and wants to play sports, but he's a big boy. He's always been a big boy, and we've been working on just his intake of now he drinks a whole lot of water. One of the things that I had him do was come to one of the programs just so he could see the effects. And it's very important that children see other children that are actually affected with diabetes and, you know, not to be afraid. But you ever heard the phrase being scared straight? One of the things is you can't sneak candy and gum and all of this stuff when your mom is a diabetic or your dad is a diabetic and you're a risk factor. You have to be very conscientious of what you intake. So one of the things that I allow my kids to do is sit down and watch other kids whose lives have been changed as a result of being a diabetic. People that have lost limbs, children that have lost limbs, children that are obese or children that are struggling with something that, you know, from 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, where they have to actually be monitored and regiment their life, and hopefully it would sink in that my kids will understand that, you know what, I'm a part of that genre that can develop this disease, so am I going to think about what I do before I do it? So because we're not with our kids 24/7, and that was my fear. You know, what I implement at home could be great, but what they do when they're away from us is totally on them. So you have to work on them over and over so that they don't have the peer pressure, or say if someone's having a party at school and there's ice cream and cake, they need to be conscientious of how much cake can eat, if they can eat the cake at all. It's just really mindset and discipline in your children.
Yes. I want to thank both of you for coming on this morning. We only have about 2 minutes left. Again, I want to mention the website, Angie Stone. Thank you so much for coming on this morning. She's working again with the Eli Lilly company. Their website is www.face-diabetes.com. Please check the website out. Lots of useful information. And also to see where Angie will be next in the United States with the Eli Lilly campaign. Also thanking Nava White from the American Diabetes Association. Thank you so much for coming on. I want to mention their website, www.diabetes.org. Again, www.diabetes.org. Thank you so much to listeners on the computer, in the chat screen. Thank you for joining me this morning. If you have any questions or suggestions for me, you can email me at SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@hotmail.com. Again, that's SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@hotmail.com. Next week, next Saturday, May 16th, check me out. I will have Anomaly. She's a wonderful singer coming on. She's worked with Patti LaBelle, Frank McComb, Jaguar Wright, Bilal, the Clark Sisters, Hezekiah Walker, and many other performers. She'll be on next Saturday, May 16th at 11 a.m. Eastern. Thank you so much, everyone. Angie, thank you again for coming on this morning and taking
so
the time
much.
Out.
All right.
Thank you, Dave. Bye-bye.
Happy Mother's Day, by the way.
Yes, happy Mother's Day to all the mothers.
Yeah. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Honey, put this on top of the minivan.
We're only going for 2 weeks. You want me to back the kitchen sink, too?
Well, is there room?
Hey, you guys. You going on vacation?
Who's that?
I don't know.
Because we're planning on robbing your house tonight.
All right, I'm calling an alarm service.
What
Wouldn't it be great if you could be warned of life's risks? If you have diabetes, you can. There's a simple blood test called A1C that can help measure your risk of complications from diabetes. Why is it important? Because more than 600 people every day die from diabetes and its complications. If your A1C is above 7, your doctor can show you how to lower it. If you have diabetes, know your risk. Know your A1C. Ask your doctor, or for more information, go to www.diabetesa1c.org or call 1-877-TEST-A1C. Brought to you by the American Diabetes Association, Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation International.